You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
It's that time again, the holidays, when the joy that you want to be feeling can get sucked out of you by anxiety about things like how to find someone the perfect gift and how to handle all those parties. Here to rescue us now is Philip Galanis. His book, Social Cues, has just been released as a handy paperback by Simon & Schuster. You can also read his column of the same name each Sunday in the New York Times style section. Welcome back to our show, Philip.
Thank you, Leonard.
And I also want our listeners to know that actually some of them have already written in some questions, but that if you have a question, you can write us on our show page at WNYC.org. Give us a call at 212-433-9692. So what about you, Philip? Do you enjoy the season?
Well, you know, I think I'm like a lot of people. From a very young age, I've had a kind of melancholy or nostalgia. Even as a little kid, I felt nostalgic because my family wasn't the perfect family. My family's holiday wasn't the holiday that I saw in all those crappy Lifetime and Hallmark and ABC Family representations. So when I went through this, when I was doing this chapter, I had to do a big chapter on the holidays in this book, I went through all the emails that I'd gotten that included the word ruined. My holiday was ruined. And most of them are just, I think we project the ruination of our holiday, which is already can't be perfect, onto poor other people.
Well, it's also expectations. When I was a kid, my family was incredibly poor, and I watched classmates who weren't exactly whose parents weren't rolling in dough get very nice presents. We didn't get such good presents, and there were four kids, so my parents were strapped in another way as well. And for years, presents mattered a lot to me. I've finally gotten past that, but for a while I would, you know, why did she buy me that instead of something that I could really use or something that was more appropriate? Or why was the present so cheap? Cheap was really important after I grew up like that.
There's a serious strain of tit for tat thinking that comes into gift giving.
Right. Last year they gave me this stupid little thing.
I gave her a chinchilla coat and she gave me a lousy set of wine glasses from Crate and Barrel. But really, what we're saying is our expectations can never be met. So I think it's really smart to just go into this season with as much awareness as possible that it will be fraught with disappointment. And we do our best, and then knowing that, you can actually get a lot of fun.
Well, will you admit to the worst gift you ever received?
Oh, without doubt. The worst gift that I ever received, I went over to a neighbor's house when I was, you know, maybe 16 or 17 years old. And I really thought of the neighbor and his wife as like, you know, they were wonderful kind of surrogate parent-y people. I could talk to them easier sometimes than I could my own parents. And I came over with a gift, and they had that horrified reaction that I now recognize as, oh, geez, we didn't even think of getting you a gift. So the woman bundled up these walnut cookies that she must have made, you know, for Easter, and they were so terrible. I mean, but so it was, not only was the present really horrible, but the knowledge that I didn't really register for them.
And then there's the sitting around, everybody opening up gifts, and you open up this thing, and it is really something that
sort of a dog.
You hate, but you've opened it up in front of the person who gave it to you. Should you just smile and say, wow,
I've
always wanted this?
Yeah, of course. I really think that trying to work things out with people at the holidays, much as it happens at the 90-minute moment of every holiday movie we see, is really not the way to go. It's simply too fraught a time.
There's also the artwork gift.
Do you still
put it up because you know that the person who gave it to you is going to come and visit?
Well, at strategic moments, you certainly do, right? I think
take
it's,
down the Rembrandt and yeah. and put up well, the Keane.
Well, let's say you now. A lot of it is about how comfortable you are in the relationship too, right? Like with my partner, with your wife, I imagine that you're in a comfort zone enough to be able to say, "Wow, I love that you thought of artwork, but you know, this isn't what I would have. This isn't the one. Let's go back to the gallery and see if we can find something we both like a little bit better." And I don't think it would hurt my boyfriend's feelings at all.
Well, do you feel uncomfortable about asking the other person what gift he or she might want?
Well, there's a little of the magic that goes out of it, of course. But I have got a new strategy, and it's one of the tips that I get into in the book. And that is, we've all got enough stuff. I bet, Leonard, you have plenty of art. I bet you've got so much art, you've got an art closet for the extra stuff.
I used to be a painter.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so you've really got art. And I've got so much stuff, and everybody's got so much stuff that like a small fire breaking out in my storage bin would be a happy occasion for me. So now I only give gifts that are about an experience, that are about a pottery class at the 92nd Street Y, a little packet of movie tickets, theater and theater evening, and a restaurant night. And I think I've got to say they go over a lot better.
Because they also take care of that other problem, giving a gift to someone who seems to have everything.
Yeah, because we've all practically – I mean, after the age of about – you know, 25, when we're still trying to scrape together hearth and home, you know, the last thing you need is a Shetland sweater. I mean, the last thing anybody needs is a Shetland or a scented candle or those lousy pretzels that have chocolate or caramel or salt or some other horrible spice on them. No, thank you.
And then, of course, there are the people who bring the same thing every time.
Exactly. Exactly.
Well, gee.
The failure of imagination, folks. Yes,
another
exactly.
Another scented candle, just like yeah, exactly. the one you gave me last year.
It was lemon last year, too.
So how do you deal with feeling you should be closer to your family if you aren't, and every dealing with them is hurtful? Well, this also can get into the gift thing.
Yeah. Well, I think that is I think that you will go straight to the heart of the holidays. And the problems that the central problem that I think we deal with is that we don't have the kind of idealized relationships with our families or with our immediate families or much, and or in that we wish we did. And so I like to take a little time out before I go and visit my family, my brothers, my mom, my uncles and aunts and cousins of whom I have legion, and recognize that there are lots of great things about our relationship, but the relationship isn't perfect. It didn't feed me everything I wanted it to feed me. Whose could? I mean, but to try to focus on, you know, try to reach back and find one time, one memory when it was pretty good. That one afternoon when your dad, who didn't really have much time for you, did figure out, you know, rather than playing baseball with this kid, he'd probably like it better if I took him to the movies. And he did it. And to focus on that, one moment maybe makes it a little bit easier. But otherwise, we all beat ourselves up. I think it's inevitable we beat ourselves up over the poverty in our emotional poverty that we all face to some extent. So
my guest is Philip Galanis, who has written novels and, of course, every week writes an article called Social Cues that appears in the style section of the New York Times. He also has a new book out, or actually it's an older book, but now available in paperback called Social Cues. Would you ever give people a copy of your novel?
If they came to my door with a present for me and I didn't have anything for them, yes, most definitely.
What about regifting? People are very uncomfortable.
People are very uncomfortable, and they get very angry in my column. But I think if you're cagey about it, and cagey implies guilt already, but if you're smart about it, then I think I like to think of it as helping a gift find a happier home. So I get lots of lovely things that I have simply no use for, and I can think of people who would need them and enjoy them a lot more. So I, one, unwrap the gift thoroughly, because often little cards and post-its and things from the original giver will be in them.
They may also have a little inscription saying,
exactly,
to Philip,
with love,
Merry Christmas, exactly. 2011.
Exactly. I once gave, in my former life as a lawyer, I once gave very proudly a big box of Godiva chocolates that was covered in golden paper. And I felt so swank giving this gift, and sort of embossed on this single sheet of chocolate was, "Welcome to Debevoise and Plimpton."
The law firm.
The law firm. And the woman I gave it to looked like, you know, really looked like she wanted to question the Eighth Amendment in a whole new terms.
We invite your calls. Our number here is 212-433-9692. That's 212-433-WNYC. Or you can leave a question or a comment on our show page at WNYC.org. Philip, let's get to the delicate area of parties. How do you extract yourself from conversations at holiday parties?
Oh, I'm very liberal with the, excuse me, one second. And I don't give an excuse. I don't say I'm going to, I need to go wash my hands. I don't say I'm going to get a drink. I don't say, would you like a drink? Because that means I've got to come back.
There's a more important person I want to speak to.
Exactly. I don't say that. I just say, excuse me, one second, and then I flee. And the other thing that I do a lot of at parties lately, and it's made me very popular at parties because a lot of people are shy at parties. Even not shy, people who are not shy at all in their lives can be very shy standing around in a room of people that they don't know very well. So even if I'm not the host, I've started saying to people, now I don't imagine you're terribly shy at a party either, but let's say you were a little shy.
It all depends. I think there are some parties where it's very easy to engage other people, and there are other parties where you get the feeling through body language or through the fact that there are these tight cliques that you're not all that invited.
Right.
And
so,
and those are the ones where you wind up standing on the side with a friend, if you're lucky enough to have a friend, and you talk for a little while and they say, let's go.
Let's go. Well, what I do in that situation now is, because it gives me something to do, it gives me a purpose, so I don't have to be uncomfortable, I take Leonard by the arm and I say, Leonard, do you know Michael Haverland? He is an excellent architect, and I know that I just heard your show about architecture, and I thought blah, blah, blah. And it gives you something, 2 minutes to talk about.
Very appreciated.
And it really makes you a little bit of a star, and it's menschy.
But what about when you're invited to parties by very nice people, but you'd prefer not to go either because it's inconvenient or last year's party was slightly dull?
Yeah.
I was once confronted by a woman who'd learned that I'd chosen to go to someone else's party rather than hers. She was rather hurt, and what could I say?
You see, that's a kind of oversensitivity that I think is emblematic of the season, because she is projecting onto you her feeling that the holiday has not given her enough. Her life experience of the holiday has been one of poverty. So you were responsible, Leonard, for the impoverishment of this season by going to somebody else's party.
She had a lot of nice people at her party, I'm sure.
I'm sure she had a lot of nice people. And so you could simply say, gosh, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry that I hurt your feeling. I simply had a prior engagement.
I think that's what I said.
I think because you're a genius.
Because the prior engagement is always a good excuse.
Exactly.
Philip Galanis is Social Cues, How to Survive the Quirks, Quandaries, and Quagmires of Today, has been released in a paperback edition by Simon & Schuster. You can read him every Sunday in the New York Times, and I'm assuming you've been getting a lot of letters recently about the holiday season.
I got a tweet that I think you'll like. My mother-in-law ruined Christmas last year by bringing 200 presents for my children. It created a zoo atmosphere, and is it rude for me to ask her to knock it off this year? And I think that's one of the biggest, best lessons about in-laws and grandparents generally, is to talk it through. This is your talk through how you want your holiday to be. If Granny brings too many presents, or if Granny brings the wrong kind of present, feel free to say, as you know, feel free to say in a way that you could never say to your own mother when you were a kid, boy, Mom, this is exactly what I didn't want. Now you can say it on behalf of your kid, but in a kind way.
And then there are people who are concerned that the kids already have too many toys, and they're getting a lot of toys.
Yeah,
way you just simply say to somebody, please don't bring a toy?
I think you can say, we are drowning in excess over here. And it would be really terrific if you didn't add to it. And I think that our kids would really like to spend an afternoon with you more than they need another Spirograph, if they even make Spirographs anymore.
Again, the number is 212-433-9692. You can leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org, and we'll come back to those calls and comments after we take a little break. Stay with us. We are back with Philip Galanis, whose article, Social Cues, appears every Sunday in the Style section of the New York Times, one of my favorite parts of the Sunday Times.
Thank you.
Almost as much fun as reading about people who I'd never heard of getting married in places that I'll never be. Also in that section.
And what their fathers and mothers
did. And looking at Bill Cunningham's photographs of people at parties I was not invited to. But that's a whole other issue. Our number here is 212-433-9692 if you want to talk about the problems of the holiday. I want to share one from our show page at WNYC.org from someone who calls herself Achu Achu. My in-laws have a growing cat population. They're up to 7 or 8, plus a shedding dog. I'm allergic to both. At one time, when there were fewer dander-producing mammals on the premises, I could get away with taking 2 Claritin and surviving for a few hours. But at the last holiday gathering, even heavily medicated, I instantly felt a burning sensation in my nasal passages, throat, and eyes, and found it difficult to breathe. I had to keep excusing myself to go outside into the cold, cold air. How do I proceed with upcoming holiday gatherings there? Not go? Their family occasions are fun, and I'd hate to have to sit them all out.
Well, that's a really a legitimate – it sounds as if she's presenting a really legitimate problem. I'm sure that they should start thinking about relocating some of the parties. Maybe she could host one. Maybe the some of the other kids could host them. But I hope this woman's not asking for permission to say that she's got a medical condition that's being badly exacerbated by being in this house, because that's the most reasonable thing on earth. So. And it's also pretty unreasonable to think that these people are going to get rid of their cats and dogs in order to suit you. So I'm thinking the solution here might be a third location.
Well,
neutral.
If you can.
If you can.
Another person talking about cats wonders...
Cats.
It's
the cat show starring Leonard
Jules
Lopez.
Asks... he keeps on... people give you cat-themed gifts if you have a cat, as an example. How do you... tell them you want something else without being rude?
Well, I don't think you tell people, as a general matter, what you want as a gift, sad as that may be. I think you could probably tell your husband to knock it off with, you know, the Cheshire Cat, you know, figurines, etc. But for most people, a gift, we have no obligation to give or receive gifts. And so if somebody wants to give you something and you don't like it, you simply say thank you and you put it in the cupboard.
Another person has written about office parties. They make him uncomfortable. He is in AA, and everybody's getting drunk. And he, at the same time, he feels that he has to go because it is office politics.
Right. It's bad. It's a
bad not to show up.
It's a bad intersection of a lot of things. It is free booze from people who you feel, oh, often we feel owe us a little something. So it's there, so we want to drink it. It blurs the line between people that we have a professional relationship with, but not real not a real life friendship with, and it also puts us into really close proximity with people who have authority over us, and
to whom we might say something indiscreet after we've had more than three or four
exactly.
drinks.
So I feel your pain. I do think it's probably a great idea to go on the early side. So if the party's called from 6 to 8, get there at 6 before anyone's had a chance to get too loaded. To everybody else, I really want to encourage you to make it a 2-drink maximum at your party, and then get the heck out of Dodge and go see your real friends, who you can act as you would normally would.
Well, let's take a call now from Shannon from Morristown, New Jersey. Hi, you're on the air.
Yeah, thanks for having me on the show. So I appreciated your conversation around, you know, the go-to gift, and I wanted to share with you what my go-to gift was and just get your comments.
Oh, good.
So I'm American, and I'm from Irish descent, but my husband is from Eastern Europe, and so our go-to gift has really been to share either a piece of folk art from his country or to share a liquor bottle that, you know, tends to be very decorative in nature. And so I just wanted to know if you thought that was just more clutter on someone's shelf, or if you thought that was, you know, a fine idea.
I think that's I think it's a terrific idea. Anything that feels, you know, original and specific to the two of you. When I was talking about go-to, I was thinking more about something that would actually take up no space at all. But I actually think that you're not, that doesn't sound like it's taking up very much space in it. I also think that the people would appreciate it as something really original.
Especially if it's from Belarus, as
exactly.
you suggest.
Well, thank you. So we'll keep on doing that.
Okay,
keep
thank you.
Keep on doing that till people tell you, please, for the love of God, would you stop doing that?
A listener from Brooklyn writes in, I find that food is a good gift because people can serve it and eat it and enjoy it during the holidays, and then it doesn't take up space after. Of course, you have to know your victims, she writes, but sometimes a really nice fruit, cheese, wine basket does the trick perfectly. 2 years ago, I sent someone an edible arrangements gift, and they loved it and served it as dessert after the holiday meal. On the other hand, there are people who bring a bottle of wine and then get upset if it's not served, though the people throwing the party have already
worked out
to use a whole bunch of other wines.
It's a very I don't know anyone. This could be my age, but I don't know anyone who doesn't want to lose about 5 pounds. So I think bringing things like cheese and chocolates to people is who've made it really clear to me that they're really trying to lose weight seems a bit cruel. But I bet this woman seems to be having a really good run of luck with her gifts. So I think she should continue.
Susan from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Hello?
Yes, Susan.
Yes. To me, the guy from AA should just go to the party, have a friend call, say his mother died, and then he has to leave the party. But
your mother can only die once, you realize.
Exactly. Should she die in like a really dramatic way? Like maybe should she have set herself on fire
dead.
Or no?
Dead. Now, this is my issue.
Okay.
I have a small family. I tell them what I want. It's always kitchen items. I like to cook. They say I'm the hardest person to shop for. They won't get me what I ask for. They'll get me gifts I don't want. Meanwhile, I told them, I want a spider. I want a Dutch oven.
What
is that about?
Because they think, because of all the lousy sitcoms on television where the mother gets really upset because the father gave her a vacuum cleaner, they think the kitchen items you're asking for are too homely and too pedestrian. So they want to get you a bangly, spangly bracelet that you don't want, right?
I have an idea.
We have
bridal registries. Why don't we have holiday registries?
Oh, I think
and
that's
then, and then, Susan, you could put your – well, I'm not sure everyone wants to spend the money for a crusade, but you can get your Dutch oven.
And my spider.
Yeah, exactly. And a really good set of whisks.
This is a funny show. I love it. Take care, guys.
Well, thank you so much. Philip Galanis is my guest. You can read him every Sunday. Philip, How many letters do you get for a typical Sunday column?
Through the year, from about January 15th, when the holiday aftermath kicks sort of slows down, to about Thanksgiving, I get about 150 questions. I get about 150, 200 questions a week. But now, starting a couple of weeks before Thanksgiving through the new year, that's at least double.
Do they tend to be along the same lines?
They tend to be along the same line. There tend to be a lot of things about gifting. There tends to be lots of things about anxiety, about spending time with family that they don't feel close with. They tend to be a lot of things about, well, as I said, about people ruining their holiday. Mm-hmm. And it's, politics at the holiday table has taken a very big space in my inbox this year.
Well, especially after this last election where some people are talking about seceding from the union. I don't know
exactly.
Whether families are seceding from other parts of the family. Oscar from New York wrote in along these lines, my family definitely loves me to come around holidays because they blame me for everything. or everything that goes wrong, they blame on me. But I take it because I love them also.
Well, that's unfortunate that you feel blamed for everything, Oscar, because I can promise you are not. Not for everything.
Madge from Montclair. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi there. I love to give and receive donations, and I think it's a kind of a happy...
You mean to charitable organizations?
To charitable organizations, and I have 3 kids, and I try to encourage that for them as well, and try to find children's organizations that are meaningful to them, and suggest that other people donate. I'm curious how you think those donations are received generally. If you're hearing more about that,
well, one of the things that I do hear a lot about is to organizations that are at all politicized, for instance. If I were a right to life person, I wouldn't be so thrilled with your giving $100 to NARAL in my name. And that's an extreme example.
Or vice versa.
Or vice versa, which would be would be just as upsetting. But it sounds as if you're looking at children's charities, maybe health charities, fine arts charities, WNYC. I can say it. I'm not employed here. Leonard probably can't. But places
WNYC.
That... WNYC? people who provide great services in our lives, it's a great time to support them. So I think it's a terrific idea as long as you're sensitive about, possibly at giving to charities that would rub someone the wrong way.
Now, we've talked about tipping in the past, but this is a time when tipping becomes a big issue, not just if you live in an apartment house, you give money to super and to all of those, but the person who delivers your mail, the person who delivers your newspaper,
yes,
if
indeed.
You get that delivered.
I like at the beginning of, before the holiday season really comes, I create a big list of everyone I'm going to give to so the budget doesn't go seriously out of control. But I got a really funny letter about a week ago from a lady whose doorman asked her if she could go, if she could give him an advance on her holiday tip, which is, I thought, was pretty bold.
Yeah.
And she, of course, was so humiliated, embarrassed by the request that she just forked it over and then felt like a patsy and wrote to me.
A number of people have written in about being asked to go to company people to parties that they would prefer not to go to. Can you just simply say to your friend or your loved one, your company party last year was really not a great, very pleasant for me. Nobody knew me. I felt alone. Or do you have to go because that's a matter of loyalty?
Well, if someone says, I really am comfortable going to my company party alone, it would make me feel so much more comfortable if you would come with me. It might be hard to say no, but I think no one's obliged. Depending on the relationship, I might do it for my boyfriend or my, you know, I might do it for a really close friend, but I wouldn't do it for, you know, certainly wouldn't do it for anyone. And I don't think people should feel guilted into it. One way to skin that cat might be to say, how about, and I'm sorry I said skin that cat. I said skin that cat once before on the show, and I got about 4 million emails. I really apologize. I didn't mean it.
And he doesn't kill dogs and either, by the way.
Either.
He doesn't kick them.
Exactly. But in this case, you might say, listen, how about we do this? You go to your company party for 45 minutes, and I'll meet you afterward, and we'll have dinner.
Now, here's a long one that somebody wrote in. And it sounds like the kind of thing you actually would deal with in your column. And
good.
We're going to end with it, okay?
Okay.
In Quizzigal from Brooklyn, who says she loves your column, asks, do you have any suggestions on how to handle a new brother-in-law? My sister met a guy last year, moved in with him 3 months later, got pregnant, got married, and is now 1 year into the relationship. This is her third husband. She has a child by husband number two. Last year, the new beau proceeded to tell my other sibling and me that our mother, who frequently takes care of my sister's daughter, is crazy, and that the father of my sister's last husband was not welcome in his house to say hello last Christmas, despite the fact that we've known that guy since he was a teenager. Without causing a huge fight, how can one put off or shut up such a clueless, insensitive person? As you might guess, we're already predisposed to be on guard against this guy.
Right. I think that you, this is one of those moments where before you're put in a position to see him, take a minute and reflect on the fact that, with all his faults, and it sounds like he's got enough faults to be on a Bravo television show, he is making your sister happy, and he is the father of this beautiful new baby who's probably a wonderful addition to the extended family. So I think the thing to do is for you to work out with your other siblings little shifts. Spend 15 minutes with him, then excuse yourself. And don't be afraid to excuse yourself for a little walk around the block when he's really driving you crazy, because fresh air helps too.
Philip, this is one of the reasons I love you. If somebody had asked me that question, I would have been totally clueless as to how to answer. Philip Galanis has been writing his column, the Social Cues, for the Sunday Style section of the New York Times since 2008. There is now a paperback edition of the book published by Simon & Schuster. And as always, it's been a lot of fun.
So much fun, Leonard. Thank you very much.